This sale season, Ritual is urging you to think about what's essential. Your daily health? Pretty essential. Making sure your products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through a traceable supply chain? Also essential. So this Black Friday, skip the micro trends and put your savings where they matter. Your health. With 40% off daily essentials like stress relief and Symbiotic Plus for gut support. Head to ritual.com/podcast and shop responsibly.
It is Ryan Seacrest here. There was a recent social media trend which consisted of flying on a plane with no music, no movies, no entertainment. But a better trend would be going to ChumbaCasino.com. It's like having a mini social casino in your pocket. Chumba Casino has over 100 online casino-style games, all absolutely free. It's the most fun you can have online and on a plane. So grab your free welcome bonus now at ChumbaCasino.com. Sponsored by Chumba Casino. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to Ben the Knee, a Song of Ice and Fire podcast. I am Sir Matt.
And I'm Sir Jimmy of House Nuts. Welcome to our Song of Ice and Fire book club. Today we are into Tyrion 5 of A Storm of Swords.
Yeah, Jimmy, you know, this chapter, let me tell you, is one I have been looking forward to because this is a game changer, okay? This is where we meet a big, huge new player. And this is one of the best parts of the show when we finally got to see Oberyn Martell step onto the screen. And this is where everything really begins to change in the book. So with that, let's go ahead and just dive right into the chapter. Tyrion has been sent to greet the 300 Dornishmen that are going to be coming into King's Landing. However, he is shocked when he finds that the Dornishmen are being led by Prince Oberyn Martell and not his brother, Prince Doran. The Red Viper of Dorne has an infamous reputation for using poison weapons in battle. The man fought in the Free Cities and even armed his own sellsword company. He studied at the Citadel for a time, and most importantly, he crippled Willis Tyrell in a tourney, though that was years ago. It has never been forgotten by the Tyrells, who will not be happy that this man is attending a marriage of one of them. The Red Viper tells Tyrion the story of how he and Elia traveled to Casterly Rock when Tyrion was an infant, and it was just after the death of Joanna Lannister. Tywin Lannister was in mourning and ignored the Martells. Oberyn and Elia were disappointed to find out that Tyrion was only a dwarf after the stories they had heard about him being Tywin's monster son. The Red Viper then gets down to the point, asking Tyrion when will justice be served. He warns Tyrion that he does not mean to stop after killing Gregor Clegane. Before he dies, the enormity that rides will tell me whence came his orders. Please assure your Lord Father of that. But Tyrion has more subtle warning. The Lannisters have tens of thousands of Tyrell men present as allies, and the Tyrells hate the Dornish, especially Prince Oberyn, for what he did to Willis.
Can we just accept that the enormity that rides is one of the greatest titles you could give to somebody?
Mm-hmm.
The enormity that rides is a crazy nickname.
Mm-hmm.
I love that so much. Yeah, this is a huge chapter, dude. I mean, you get a whole nother piece of the political puzzle and the history, obviously, of Westeros. And in the show, Dorne was not the most popular subplot of all time, which is a damn shame because Dorne is some of my favorite stuff in the book. I mean, Prince Dorne not coming is immediately makes you go, well, why? And who is this guy? And what's he like? And then we end up getting a perspective near him, you know, in the next book, which is pretty amazing. But Oberyn, I mean, studying at the Citadel, poison swords, kissing his sister, like, you know, this is a wild dude. And leading sell swords is always something I can get down with. So he's here for revenge, but he's also talking to Tyrion and trying to get the lay of the land and letting him know what his intentions are. And of course we know that this eventually comes down to Oberyn fighting for Tyrion because he gets to have some of his justice that he so desperately wants.
Why did it take him so long to get this justice, though?
Well, probably looking for the right opportunity. I also do wonder if you know, his brother had something to do with holding him off as long as physically possible, right?
Yeah. That's something I've always wondered about Oberyn's character. It's like, why did it take you so long?
Also, people's like, goals and focuses change as they get older. He's getting a little bit older now. Maybe he's like, okay, well, before I get too old, let me go. Yeah, you know, he's done all of the whoring and cell sorting he can, and now he's ready to take care of business for the family. Or maybe he was trying to trust it. This is probably what more likely
he
is.
Waited. Maybe he was waiting until Robert Baratheon was dead.
Possibly. Also possible that he really trusted that Dorne was going to do the right thing, and now he's waited so long, and he said, forget it, you're not going to move, I'll move. And he's doing it, right? Because that is kind of thing. Is like, no one's trusting Dorne anymore, right? It's like his passiveness has now infuriated his family, and they're all going to ruin this plan that he's had for so long, which is kind of like what Feast for Crows is everyone just doing shit without him, and him being like, God damn it. Like, if you had just waited.
Yeah. Maybe he was hoping, we don't really hear a lot about it, but maybe he was hoping he would meet the Mountain in a tournament, and it just sort of never happened that they would like ride against each other or fight against each other.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, just because the way the lists work, right, is you just never really have that opportunity. Because clearly we know he fights in tournaments and things like that. Like, yeah, he obviously injured Willis Tyrell, who, you know, Sansa was kind of hoping-ish to marry. And yeah, I mean, it just kind of goes that direction. Now, the chapter itself is actually, it's actually sort of a short chapter.
It is, but man, is it? It's huge.
Yeah,
because it introduces this massive player in a whole nother region of Westeros.
Yeah, so on my Kindle, it's 4 pages, but yeah, so there's certainly a lot. We'll break down obviously as much as we can, but there's a little bit of talk of lemons here.
Oh, yeah, Lemon Gate,
lemons and Dorns. They're looking at all of the things, right? You know, all of the, they're standing there and they're seeing all of the houses come. And this is actually kind of a cool lore dump chapter too, because
mm-hmm.
you get introduced to things. Right, Bronn looked very much at night today, you know, his new doublet, a red sun on orange, he called, with a spear through its back. Martell, Podrick Payne said at once. House Martell of Sunspear, my lord, the Prince of Dorne. My horse would have known that one, said Tyrion. And, you know, give him another, Bronn. There's a purple flag with yellow balls. Lemons, Pod said hopefully. A purple field strewn with lemons for House Dalt, or of Lemonwood. Now maybe that's a house we should investigate, right? In Dorne. House Lemonwood. That could be interesting, you know, and see if they have any connections to Daenerys or anything like that.
Very strange.
Might be. Next one is a big black bird on yellow, something pink or white in its claws, hard to say with the banner flapping. The vulture of Blackmont grasps a baby in its talons, said Pod. House Blackmont of Blackmont. Bronn laughed. Reading books again? Books will ruin your sword eye, boy. I see a skull too, a black banner, the crown of skull of House Manwood of Manwoody. Bone and gold on black. Pod sounded more confident with each correct answer. The Manwoodies of King's Grave. 3 black spiders, they're scorpions. That's Sir Cargoyle of Sandstone. 3 scorpions, black on red, red and yellow, a jagged line between. The flames of Hellholt, House Altar. It's pretty cool. This is where you get a lot of cool little like world building in here.
Yeah. And it's all about the subtle details, you know. Then this is the kind of stuff that makes a world feel tangible and real, that it's been lived in, that there's actual places to go, and it makes you excited to see those places. Obviously, Feast for Crows, we end up in Dorne, which is my favorite part of the book, possibly, other than Jaime and the Riverlands. So this is the kind of quality world building scene setting that I really love.
Yeah. Let me pull up this House Dalt here. And
let's see it.
See if anything comes up. It is a purple field. It is a purple field with lemon. That's literally like all we know about it. Let's see. House Dalt. What do we know about House Dalt? Among Dorne Martell's favorite children of the Winter Garden is a Dalt boy whose relationship with the main branch is uncertain. Sir Audrey Dalt is among Princess Arianne Martell's dearest friends. He joins Arianne in her plan to crown Princess Marcella Baratheon as one of the conspirators trying to bring her to Hellholt. While prisoner in the Spear of Tower of Sunspear, Arianne thinks Diesel is too dutiful to fight. Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it, man. That's pretty much all we've got about House Dalt here.
Mm-hmm. Not much.
Yeah, I wonder. There's probably a lot of houses in Dorne that have lemons.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, and they sit on the Lemonwood throne, and it is at almost, it's just south of Sunspear, so it is out there on the water.
Could but maybe that's where Daenerys was.
Maybe. I mean, are you going to keep her in Sunspear? Are you going to keep her somewhere a little more
remote?
Remote.
Mm-hmm. It could be. You heard it here. We cracked the code.
Let's see. During the First Dornish War, Lemonwood was captured by Rhaenys Targaryen, her sister Visenya Targaryen, as they unleashed the dragon flame of Vhagar on Lemonwood after Dornishmen attacked Cape Wrath. Yeah, and then prior to the coming of the Andals, some High Kings of Dorne resided at a wooden molt in Bailey Castle near Lemonwood, but their river kingdom eventually splintered. So that's it. That's all we know about it, except that it may also have been the seat where Daenerys was sitting. Daenerys and sitting then in Lemonwood.
More to come.
Yeah. Now, what if it was lemon? What if it was, if instead of purple, it was red? Maybe the red door is a purple door and not a red one. You know,
you can't have false memories.
Sometimes purple faded can look red.
Oh my goodness, Matt's putting it all together, folks. Breaking news.
So pretty cool. And then, you know, we get some other stuff. They really spend a lot of time talking about all of these different Dornish people that are coming in and stuff like that. Because really, at this point in time, this is like the first we've ever even seen of Dorne.
Yeah, this is
we've heard about them, but this, I mean, we've never seen any of them.
Yeah.
And so now it's like, hey, this, and I mean, this is really, even for as small as it is, a pretty massive chapter, because it's like this entire new group and wave of people and players and everything like enter the stage. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, continuing on here. I mean, really, we get Prince Oberyn shows up, and then he and Tyrion start having a conversation.
Do you think there's a reason? I mean, obviously Tyrion was sent out to meet with him, but I almost feel like Oberyn was kind of giving him a bit of a compliment, but like maybe what's the word I'm looking for? Like grace, maybe, whenever he's like, you know, I heard of this monster son of Lannister. Turns out you're just a dwarf. Who cares? Because Oberyn's really well traveled. They're not nearly as pretentious in Dorne as they are in Castle Rock. So Oberyn in some ways is kind of like building a bridge between them, I feel. Like, you're not a monster. You're just a dwarf.
Yeah. Yeah, I will say, man, God, you feel terrible for Tyrion when he's telling him the story of how, like, Cersei used to pinch him and stuff like that.
I hate that.
He even talks about how Tyrion, like kind of winces as he thinks about it. And it's like, wow, dude, she really does hate me. That is kind of like it's not a throwaway line because it has importance, but it's not like the important thing of this whole chapter. But it's like pretty massive. In terms of Tyrion, yeah, in terms of their character, and it's just sort of like a one little line that's, you know, sandwiched, and which is why we always talk about how George, man, he loves it. He just sandwiches these things together, and then you're just stuck with this like super important piece of the puzzle, but it's like kind of hidden in everything else that's going on. But yeah, I mean, that's like a pretty huge deal, because I think you can just tell from when Tyrion is talking about it, it's like, wow, like she really hates me.
Yeah, and I think a lot of the animosity towards Cersei as a character comes because of Tyrion's POV, and we all love him so much, at least up to this point, until he, you know, kind of starts on his little bit of a villain arc in the final book. But I think a lot of the hate for Cersei comes from little things like this, and these are the little daggers that are twisted that make us, you know, like you said, flinch. You're like, oh, gosh, like it's so sad. Also, this is going to have a pretty big payoff in Tyrion's trial.
Another thing I noticed here, Jimmy, I just want to point this out. This is just a cool little thing going back to all the houses and everything. When they're looking at all the houses, very good, exclaimed Tyrion. One more lad. Bronn scanned the ranks of the approaching Dornishmen. That last is a golden feather on green cheeks, a golden quill, Sir Jordan of the Tor. Which is kind of actually a nod to Robert Jordan.
Yes.
And the Wheel of Time series. So that's kind of cool.
Very cool. And Robert Jordan actually gave George one of his first endorsements on Game of Thrones. And at that time, Robert Jordan was a humongous person in the fantasy genre, which was very beneficial. That was pretty cool. Pretty cool little nods here.
Yeah.
How do you feel when you switch to Geico and save on your car insurance? It's like going to work on one Thursday morning and thinking to yourself, just one more day until Friday. But then somebody in the elevator says, Happy Friday! Then you check your phone quickly and discover today is actually Friday. So yes, Happy Friday, random stranger in the elevator. Happy Friday indeed. Yep, switching and saving with Geico feels just like that. Get more with Geico.
So, and I have some notes pulled up as well, and says green checks are what the author Robert Jordan received in payment from Tor, the publishing house. And I guess there's actually another one in Wheel of Time, or another Wheel of Time reference, I should say, in A Feast for Crows, what I meant to say. Archmaester Rigney once wrote history is a wheel, for the nature of man is fundamentally unchanging. What has happened before will perforce happen again. So that's kind of cool.
Very, very cool. I love that.
Yeah. So just like cool. And that's a lot of that happens in like world building. And, you know, when George does these little world building dumps, there's always those kind of things. Like then there's references, all kinds of stuff. Sesame Street, you know.
Yeah. And he references Gene Wolfe as well. And some Jack Vance stuff. Obviously, Roger Zelazny's Lord of Light is pretty heavy handed, but he is there as well. And then I'm sure plenty and plenty of Stanley references to go around.
Yeah, absolutely. So, okay. So I guess, you know, some big things to take away from this chapter, when you begin to look at it, because again, it's a big chapter that happens, but it's kind of a small chapter in terms of actually like, text. It is sort of a thing, mm-hmm. You know, we get the back and forth between Tyrion and Oberyn, which I think is cool. And at first it does feel a little intimidating, but then you kind of do get to see that they do have some respect for each other almost immediately, which I think, as you said, will play into the trial, in that I think Oberyn begins to kind of like Tyrion, as well as you can also get to see that even though Tyrion is small, you get to see that Tyrion is kind of on the same level, at least, you know, politically with Oberyn.
Yeah. And I think Oberyn probably is aware of a little bit of the going ons of King's Landing. He knows where Tyrion's position is. And I think he's, in some ways, probably testing the waters with Tyrion a bit, knowing that Tyrion's like an outcast of his family. I also think Oberyn's kind of attracted to things that are not usual, and Tyrion is anything but usual with the Lannister family. So I think that there's a motivation there for Oberyn to talk to Tyrion outside of just being the fact that Tyrion's the one who is told to greet him.
Yeah. You know, and there's just a bunch of lines when Tyrion first meets him. That's kind of cool. You know, the Red Viper of Dorne, and what in the seven hells am I supposed to do with him? Right now that he shows up, I think Tyrion's like, uh-oh. And he literally
it's
says,
a huge issue.
Oh yeah, Tyrion's like, there's about to be blood in the streets. Like it's bad.
That tension's there, isn't it? It's like, oh yeah. My God. Yeah. And will be blood. There'll be blood later on. Plenty of
it. Oh yeah. And that's one of the cool scenes we see in the show that we don't get in the books, is that conversation between Tywin and Oberyn.
Yeah, it's true.
When they visit each other, like that's, and Tywin like says, "All right, you can go after him if you want." You know, I mean, that's some pretty cool stuff as well. Yeah. So again, I mean, I'm just looking through here. Unfortunately, it is kind of like a small chapter, but I mean, I guess we'll talk about like the some more of the significance of this, right? Mm-hmm. I think one of the things that you read when you read this chapter for the first time, you're thinking, oh, okay, you're sort of so intrigued by Oberyn, and then Oberyn has such an important role to play. Mm-hmm. But it was supposed to be Doran Martell that shows up.
That's right.
He's sick, so that has its own route that it's going to go. And then obviously the fact that he doesn't come, I mean, that could be a totally different story if it's Doran Martell who comes, who's like the polar opposite of Oberyn.
Yeah, definitely. And Doran has these long scheming plans that he's been waiting on for a long time. And Oberyn's death is actually going to catapult his family into chaos. And then we have, obviously, the daughters, nieces, everything. Basically, Doran's entire family is going to be thrown into an uproar. And I think all of these things are most likely going to sabotage many of the plans that Doran had, but not all.
Do you think Doran makes it out of Winds of Winter alive? I don't.
Yes, in some form, yeah. I think Edric, there's a good chance that he ends up being very important. Maybe slaying Darkstar, becoming Sword of the Morning. He ends up sitting, maybe, I don't know, to be honest with you. But, I mean, in some fashion.
I guess that is House Dane. Yeah, I guess I was thinking more of like House Martell. Yeah.
I mean, that is
things do not look good for House Martell.
Yeah, things are not looking good for House Martell, especially if they end up aligning with Griff. But then there's the Daenerys coming over, and
I think the biggest player is going to be the Sphinx.
Yes.
Alyris, Sorella Sand.
So cool, dude. So cool. Yeah.
I mean,
Sand Snakes are dope.
Yeah, I think she's going to be the big player that's sort of left.
Yeah, and you know,
she's the riddle. Listen, the whole deal.
We've talked plenty of times, and we talked about last time, Stannis is a big question mark. Lady Stoneheart's a big question mark. But I think Dorne is the most undervalued, underappreciated part of the story.
We have no idea because the show completely wrote it out.
The show completely abandoned it, right? So nothing about the end of it, how it all ends up working out, has almost anything to do with Dorne Martell or Sorella. None of it, right? Yeah. So like Dorne is a whole third of this situation that is just removed from the show, and they will 100% have a part to play, more so of a part to play in the ending of the series, the battle of the Long Night, all this stuff. So if anything, Dorne would be my biggest motivation for someone who says, well, I know how the show ends. I'd say, well,
yeah,
Dorne kind of just you're right, thrown away.
Yeah, because I think it's like, even, you know, I'm guilty of this too, is like thinking about how, like, you think about all the players and yes, you know, the show went in his direction, the books might go in a totally different direction, but obviously I still will believe that some of the framework that the show lays out is what's going to happen.
Well, right? We know the moments, right? George told us the moments that he gave.
Yeah, even like, so let's just say that it most likely, and George has kind of hinted at, and you know, that it ends with Bran being king. Let's just say
that was one of his points. Yeah,
right. It ends with Bran being king. White Walker's defeated, the whole deal, right? Yeah, I mean, you have Lady Stoneheart out there. To me, Stoneheart seems like she doesn't have much more to do in terms of the player. And I don't feel like she's going to be doing anything on like a absolutely massive scale, like something that a young Griff could do. Right. I mean, I think it feels like more like it's Brotherhood Without Banners type level stuff.
It will impact the Freys a lot, which are huge house now. Right. Like
it's certainly not to like the level of like a young Griff, like literally who could like wage war on the entire Seven Kingdoms. Right. Not that he's going to, but in theory, could. Stannis is still an enormous block. The Faith are incredibly undervalued because I don't think the Faith are going to end the same way that they do in the show. Mm-hmm. But yeah, Dorne is the biggest question mark of all of the things. And I, like, when we talk about this, sometimes I say, well, Stannis is like the biggest question mark. I guess what I mean when I talk about Stannis, like, Stannis is the biggest block, right? Because it's like he's the rock in the water. That mm-hmm. you know, like if you want to pick it up and the ripples come out, because that is the biggest catalyst to change sort of everything. Like you're literally, he's the fork in the road. Okay. Am I gonna go this way? Am I gonna go this way? You can't do any of it until George figures out what's going on with Stannis, whether it's the same as the show, which is one very likely scenario and the quick end to get out of Stannis' storyline, or you go in another direction in which. Because if you go in that direction, then the Boltons and Stannis, then the Boltons are kind of taken off the piece, and you're going to deal with like a evil Stannis or who knows what.
Well, Stannis is also one of the reasons why they had to skip the 5-year gap, which was the plan all along. Because it's like, well, what is Stannis doing at the wall for 5 years?
Right. Yeah. But you are correct. The biggest question mark is by far Dorne, because
it's intertwined in all of it.
The show completely writes him out.
Daenerys, Fagon. The battle for the Long Night, because of the Sword of the Morning being involved in Dorne.
Yeah, like, they can ally with young Griff. They mm-hmm. could oppose him. They could ally with Daenerys if Lemongate is a whole big deal. And, you know, Daenerys did stay in Dorne and all of those things. Or they could oppose Daenerys because they're one of Daenerys's first allies when she comes back over. In the show, and then they sort of just kill him off, and it's like, okay, well, Dorne's really out of the picture now, right? But yeah, I mean, then if we include all of Dorne, then you have like Edric Dayne and all those things, as opposed to just sort of the Martells. But Dorne, or God, what's his name? Quentin, just
went Quentin Martell's death is huge,
and that may be pushback if she's looking for an ally.
Oh, it's big.
Because now Dorne may ally with young Griff instead of a Daenerys who could be coming over. So that changes everything. Because then who are Daenerys's allies when she comes over? Right.
Maybe she expects House Martell to be. I mean, I don't know. I really don't know how it all works out. And that's the fun of it, is that Dorne mm-hmm. is this massive puzzle piece. You know, I would say it's like a third.
Yeah. And this might be maybe where George, like, like this chapter alone, literally maybe the chapter where George is like, this whole thing is going to be way bigger than I thought. Cause you know, originally it's supposed to be a trilogy, but you hit this point and you literally, cause he could have not included Dorne.
I think he could have went with the show, which is just give us a little glimpse, move on. But in Feast for Crows, I mean,
take the show out of it. Like just him writing this whole thing from where we go. I mean, he could have simply not included Dorne, but now you bring in Dorne and it's a huge player. And it drastically opens up the story to be so much more.
Yeah. I mean,
this chapter right here is literally like, boom, now we're in really garden mode.
Yeah, and Arya Hota becomes a new POV in Feast for Crows, where we get to see a whole bunch of going ons in Dorne, and it matters quite a bit. Yeah. So, I think Dorne's awesome, dude. And when we read through these, especially when we get to Feast for Crows, you know, we have to pay attention in A Dance of Dragons to the Dorne chapters. They're very important, and they will be. I think they get ignored just because they weren't in the show. I think people will say, man, they were cut, but they're not cut in the books. They're expanded on. Great.
And one last piece I want to talk about, because again, like this chapter is kind of short. I mean, the summary kind of explains it all. Man, it makes you because a character I think that we gets overlooked a lot, as even as we dive back into the series and people talk about theories and all of those things, is poor Elia Martell.
Yeah,
can't even get avenged by Oberyn.
There is no justice,
not for her, man.
Yeah, that's rough.
We don't know if she was on board with Rhaegar, perhaps being in love with Lyanna, because, you know, we meet all these Martells and they seem to be sort of okay with people marrying multiple people and having multiple relationships and stuff. Maybe she wasn't okay with it. Who knows? But man, it feels like she gets no justice whatsoever.
Unless if Fagon is Aegon.
Yeah. Then it's his mother, I guess. Yeah. Okay. Interesting. All interesting. And that's what I say at the end of every episode, but it's just become my transitional piece. Like, yeah, very interesting. Okay.
Yes.
All right. Well, hey guys, with that, we want to thank you for playing the Game of Thrones. In our next episode, we will be discussing A Storm of Swords, Chapter 39, Arya 7.
And if you like our podcast, don't forget to subscribe, like us, write a review, leave a comment, or send us a raven at btkcast@gmail.com or bendtheneepodcast.com.
We'll see you next time. And remember that winter is coming.
This sale season, Ritual is urging you to think about what's essential. Your daily health? Pretty essential. Making sure your products are heavy metal tested, clean label project certified, and sourced through a traceable supply chain? Also essential. So this Black Friday, skip the micro trends and put your savings where they matter. Your health. With 40% off daily essentials like stress relief and Symbiotic Plus for gut support. Head to ritual.com/podcast and shop responsibly.
It can get lonely climbing Mount McKinley, so to entertain myself, I go to ChumbaCasino.com. At Chumba Casino, I can play hundreds of online casino-style games for free, like online slots, bingo, slingo, and more. Plus, I get a daily login bonus. It's just too bad that up here, I don't have anyone to share my excitement with. Woohoo! Woo-hoo!
Live the Chumba life anytime, anywhere. Play for free now at ChumbaCasino.com. VGW Group. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.